And a good rainy Thursday morning to you, and welcome into Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Another loaded show here today in about 15 minutes or less. Paul Finebaum from ESPN and SEC Network. Hey, Paul. We'll talk to him at 10:15. Floyd Reese, our weekly chat with him, the GM, to start the second hour of the program. Silly underdog picks we'll review. Some will be happy, some will not, and then we'll make our selections here for another week of silly underdog picks. And don't forget, you need to play along with us. Go to thegamenashville.com and make your three picks. And then Elliot Friedman will join us from Sportsnet and 31 Thoughts in the final hour. Speaking of hockey, guys, the Lightning take a 2-1 lead after the 5-2 victory last night over the Dallas Stars and getting the second goal in the night for Tampa. Some guy named Stamkos? Tell me a little bit more about this guy.
Yeah, who I haven't seen this guy. Haven't seen this guy in a while. Yeah, he happens to be their captain.
I think he hadn't played since February, I think.
Well, it just shows you how loaded that team is. And I guess we've stopped appreciating just how deep they are in talent just because you're like, well, they haven't won in a long time. But now you get him back and he makes a play like that, that's almost unfair. And as scrappy and as tight-knit as Dallas has been, they just had no answer for that group last night. That was a little bit alarming. It is only 2-1. Dallas has surprised us all the way through, so maybe they've got something else. But that was a very decisive win last night for sure.
Now they have a 2-1 lead in that series. I picked Tampa. I said it. They're the Virginia Cavaliers of hockey. Virginia Cavaliers of college basketball, who got upset with high expectations. Everybody predicting them to win. They got beaten the first round by a 16 seed, which had never been done, and they came back and they cut down the Nets the next year. I think Tampa is going to finish. I think they smell blood in the water now, and I think they're going to fit. Dallas is not going to go away. I'm not writing Dallas off. I'm
That's
just
good.
Saying Tampa is – they're on the doorstep. They can feel it, and they're just really talented. And if Stamkos plays the rest of the way, I just think it's going to be a pretty tall mountain for Dallas to climb.
You know what? I'm still a believer because I didn't pick the Tampa Bay Lightning like you did. No. I picked
the Stars.
You're going to get people angry when you do that. You make people mad when you do that.
I know. It's a heel turn.
It really is.
Pantera.
At Chase on game. You can tweet him. At Chase on game.
Ryan's going to come in here and
his
ban
name
me
is
again.
Chase. Remember, that's Chase that's doing that. See, that's a little pet peeve on the show.
I know.
Know who you're talking to. Know who you're mad at, okay?
Or just blame Jared. That's easier. Just do that.
That is a constant theme.
When in doubt, blame
that's been going
blame
on
Jared
for years.
Just, I think that's the easiest. But
you, if this plays out the way I suspect it's going to, Chase, you came out of the gates, but it is a marathon, and you have come out of the gates like it was a sprint, and you're kind of.
I'm teetering.
Yeah. Yeah, you got some wobbly wheels with your picks down the stretch.
That's all right. Maybe it's reverse psychology. Maybe. It's not, but
reverse psychology?
It could be.
Hey, we're going to give you a 2-1 lead to make you feel good?
No. Maybe I pick the Dallas Stars secretly hoping that they actually lose.
Oh.
But
oh, yeah, no one's buying that.
Yeah, no. Anyway, how are you guys?
The other one was... The Heat have now taken a 3-1 lead over the Celtics. Tyler Hero, 37 points off the bench. Let me ask you guys something. And I'm just talking out loud because I've been thinking about this watching.
Spitballing?
The little NBA playoffs. You guys have watched much more than me. But I certainly, recap all the highlights and look at the box scores and see who's doing what and is John Calipari getting the most out of these players at Kentucky? Because it seems like they're going on to the next level and they're becoming superstars. Is it just simply one and done? It's very hard to make that magic happen in a one and done season. and they're 18 years old, and as they get older and more seasoned, they blossom into these players? Or is he truly maximizing this incredible talent that he's bringing into Lexington? Because yet again, add Tyler Hero to the list of players that are dominating things in the NBA.
Well, how about Bam Adebayo? You'd have to help me out here. Maybe Elijah can. Elijah is probably the one that watches the most college basketball of all of us right now. Tell me about Bam Adebayo.
College basketball or NBA?
Well, I think both. He's kind of a junkie, guys. Secret. You guys may not know this. He's got a problem.
Well, he's not watching college basketball right now. We're watching
right now,
the same amount
right now.
As he is.
But, okay, I want all of you to tell me, because I remember Hero. I remember Murray at Kentucky. I don't remember Bam Adebayo at Kentucky very much.
I do. I remember him. I didn't think he was
going to be. Well, you're a Kentucky, you know, you went to Kentucky. You watched them close. Tell me about him at Kentucky. Jog my memory.
See, the thing with him at Kentucky is he was just used completely different. I mean,
what team was he on? Like, who was on his team? The team changes every year, right? It's a new team every year.
He was on the team with De'Aaron Fox. I can't remember the other guys on that team. But Fox and Adebayo were, the two big names on that team. They're the two lottery picks. But just the way he was used was totally different. I mean,
when did they lose in the tournament?
Elite Eight. That was the Luke May shot with, like, a second or two left.
They had no good.
Okay.
It was sickening.
North Carolina. Okay, yeah. So North Carolina went and won the whole thing.
Yeah, and they easily could have. I mean, that essentially might have been the national championship game.
Yeah, yes. That's what most people felt like.
And that Kentucky team was pretty good. But, like, John Calipari had this kid for a year and didn't realize that he might have been the best passer on the team, and all he did was screen and roll to the bucket and just have him go up there and catch lobs.
Okay, so Darren, give me your memory of Adebayo, because this guy's getting double-doubles every night. Like, you're asking yourself if
he's
you've
good
been
on NBA 2K.
A casual, and if you're a casual NBA fan, you're saying, wait a minute, the Heat are on the verge of going to the NBA final? Who's on the Heat? Like, I guarantee you there's people that are in that boat. So give me your memory,
Adebayo. I don't think he's the first guy that has gone on and turned in and blossomed into something a little bit more,
right,
you know, than what we thought. Like I said, it may be. I'm just simply asking the question, Willie. Is this just, hey, that's not fair. They're 18. They just got out of high school, and they're there for 1 year. Like, that's hard to, you know, strike lightning in a bottle in a one-year window. And then as they go on to the next level and they become adults and professional athletes and they're around older people and they season and they blossom into these players, is that the reason it's happening? Or am I simply just asking, you know what, we just keep seeing one superstar after another in the NBA that's coming from John Calipari's program, which he went out and recruited, and they played there. And they, you know, he's got one national championship to show for it. Is he truly getting the most out of these guys that have become superstars at the next level?
Well, if I know Kentucky, but
Jamal, we were just talking about Jamal Murray. I mean, do we need to go down the list?
There's a long list. I'm trying to remember the other guy now. There's so many.
Devin Booker didn't even start for John Calipari.
Yeah, Devin Booker didn't even look at him in Phoenix.
The NBA is littered with those guys for sure. Here's my answer to that, because I will guarantee you, Darren, knowing Kentucky fans, there's more than one in a chat room or on a sports talk show.
A chat room?
Well, whatever.
It's the last time you were in a chat room.
Well, Kentucky, maybe there's some older fans that are still doing chat rooms. I don't know.
Okay, go ahead.
On message boards. MySpace.
You can page Willie. You can hit him on his beeper at 615.
Oh, man. But you know what I'm saying. I guarantee this is being discussed in whatever form you choose in Kentucky. My answer to that would be, Darren, you hit on it. When they're that young and thrown together, it is hard to win the whole thing more than they have. I think probably people would say they probably had a chance to win one or two more. But it's hard to win the whole thing. You got to be perfect. Somebody has one bad night or somebody has one great night and you're out in the format. If you had to beat them 4 out of 7, it might be different. But I just think it shows you that it's hard when you get those guys and you have them for 1 year, not even a full calendar year, right? Once March is over, I mean, you're there really from October to March. So it's more like 7 or 8 months that you really get a chance to work with them. I guess you do some in the summer now. You get some chances like you didn't before to work with the guys, but there's such an unfinished product. Think about when the guys get drafted in hockey and baseball when they're 18 and how different they look when they're 21 or 22. That's what's happening. Like, so Adebayo is a beast. He's an absolute beast right now. I'd like to go back and look at a video of him as a freshman, how much he's grown and developed since then.
So the vibe of all that is you believe it's just, hey, they're young. It's they're young, and that's really hard to do. And as they get older,
it's not like they didn't win. They won a lot of games. They just didn't win a lot of national. They won one national championship.
But they weren't one-star recruits that blossomed into superstars in the NBA. I mean, they came in with tons of notoriety, right? I mean, they were the cream of the crop, the best of the best in high school basketball throughout the country. So, I mean, they came in with huge expectations. So, of course, they did a lot of winning. But, I mean, I'm just asking, man, you see these guys at the next level, and you do wonder why he doesn't have – maybe more championships than he does at Kentucky.
Yeah, that's the hero is the one that's the biggest surprise because he's so young, right? This is his first year, 20? And he's absolutely lighting it up in this series.
Yeah, I just think they haven't had the development time, and now you see it once they get to the NBA. That's how I've always felt about one-and-dones. I mean, it's hurt the basketball product in the NCAA. Now, I mean, we'll get into it and watch it and on this show especially, but, I mean, when you can't build chemistry as a team, it hurts. And now you see these guys go to the next level, and they're able to do that. They're able to build chemistry. So I think that's what it is.
I'll ask Paul on the other side. Let's talk with Paul Feinbaum, our weekly chat with him, next on Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
All them dogs are counting down, about to put the anchor down. Hotty toddy, who's it going to be?
Every Thursday at this time, when you hear that music, you know who's next. Paul Feinbaum, brought to you by MTGRT.com, your live and local mortgage expert. Back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Paul, good morning.
Good morning, guys. How's everybody?
Everybody's good here. It's a little rainy here in Nashville, but that's okay. We'll take a little bit of rain every once in a while. I'm going to start with somewhere you probably didn't expect me to start on the show, because we're in college football season. But we were talking about in the first segment, and I just want to get your take on it because of this conference. And I'm going to phrase it this way. Would you see what these guys are doing at the next level in the NBA, like Tyler Hero last night for the Heat, Bam Adebayo for the Heat, and Jamal Murray for Denver? And, I could go on Devin Booker, what he's done in Phoenix. These guys leave Kentucky and not only are being productive, Paul, they're turning into superstars. So the question I have, is it fair to ask if John Calipari is getting the most out of them at Kentucky in that one little one-year window, or is it unfair because they're 18 years old, it's hard to make all that work in a one-year window, and as they get older and they mature, they blossom into these professional athlete superstars? So where do you lean on that?
I think it's very fair. It's a legitimate question, and I frankly have asked it before in the past, much to the chagrin of Kentucky fans, especially after the perfect season blew up. I think it was in 2015 against Wisconsin in that national semifinal game. I think Cal is a fantastic coach, but you guys know Cal sells his program not on the conventional Kentucky approach, which every other Kentucky coach has done, winning the national championship. He sells it on draft night.
Yeah.
You come here, and the biggest night of your college career is going to be when you get drafted, whether you're in the lottery or wherever. And that does not play well with the old line Kentucky fan. I'm not talking about the modern fan. I'm talking about the way back fan. Who was either a kid or their grandpa told them about the days of Adolph Rupp and on down, and I think there is a culture clash there. And his career's not over yet. And I thought he had a really good team last year that would have had a shot a little bit from the outside, which is more Cal's way. But 2012 is the only championship, and there are a lot of missed opportunities. The year before, with the team that is littered by NBA players right now, as you guys know, one in particular who's maybe leading the Lakers to a championship, and all the names that you just got through mentioning, and Cal has blown a couple of big championships. He's had others, I don't think one is for that amount of talent, one isn't enough.
Hmm. Do you remember Bam Adebayo at Kentucky? I mean, did you see this coming?
It seems like I remember seeing him for a second.
Like most of those guys.
The culture class is such a good way of putting it, Paul, because you know there's Kentucky fans that can name the starting five year after year for decades, right? But it gets harder when the guys change every year. It's not like Farmer and Pelfrey and Mashburn that for three straight years were the guys, right? You just don't have a nucleus like that anymore.
No, and that's what, Cal sells that too. And just think about it. If you're the number one, point guard or big man in the country, and you grow up and, just throw a dart at the country, Indianapolis, Nashville, New Orleans, Texas. Outside of, local ties, it's not hard to come up with a five places to visit. You start Duke, North Carolina, Kentucky, and then you, depending on what part of the country you're in, you might slip in, Villanova or Syracuse or UCLA or somewhere else meet where the region of your country. But Kentucky ought to be on everyone's list. So I don't think it's difficult to recruit there, and especially when you have somebody like him, and especially when he sells the past and the hundreds of millions of dollars that have been earned. But there's argument, and I haven't watched much college basketball in the last few months, but there's a tug of war between the one and done and building a team, and look at Cal. He acquires the biggest and most impressive talent. Although, for about 2 years, he was missing out on a couple of players. I think he's making back up for it now.
Yeah. What do you make of the Cade Mays saga for Tennessee? And what did you make of the commissioner's comments this week about the rule? Like, hey, rules are rules, and that's what you guys voted on. What do you make of that?
Yeah, rules are rules, and the SEC had a rule until recently that they played 8 conference games. So
fair.
Point. I don't fine bomb.
In today's modern world, I really don't believe in any rules. I am for the player, and I understand. I was there at the meetings when they passed that. It's not like I'm acting like I wasn't sitting around the pool that day in Destin. I remember it. And there's reason for it. And these are administrators and coaches who want to protect their turf. But I find it just insane to listen to, name your coach, whether it's Saban or Kirby Smart or someone else, argue and try to keep someone from going someplace else. To me, how many times have you heard a coach say, well, so-and-so doesn't want to be here, I don't want him to be here. Well, then let him go. The commissioner is correct. But ultimately you have to get the schools to sign off on it. And I just think it's a ridiculous rule that, especially today when there are so many mitigating circumstances.
Who voted on that? Was it the coaches, or did you say coaches and administrators?
Well, ultimately this is how it works. I hate to sound like a wonk here, but I've gone to too many of these meetings. Coaches make recommendations to their ADs. The ADs pass it along. And ultimately, the presidents of the league make recommendations. They're the ones who vote on all legislation. So, these are things coaches wanted. I say for good reason, but so what? I mean, if you lose you're going back to basketball. If you lose Tyler Hero, you lose him to Alabama or Tennessee, it might affect your season a little bit more. But Name me one player leaving an SEC school for another that's going to make that much of a difference. I mean, is Cade Mays, is he going to cost Georgia the Tennessee game this year? I doubt it.
Talking to Paul Feinbaum. He joins us every week at this time now. Paul, as we look, it's our first SEC Saturday coming up here. Before we get into some of the matchups here, we've kind of kicked this around throughout the week. It is going to be different. Like, what separates the SEC? It's the atmosphere, the environment, the pageantry. Everybody's got to sacrifice some of that this week. I just try to think of some of the fans that are loyal listeners to your show, for example, that they got to change rituals that they've been doing for decades here.
Yeah, and I have found, if you promise not to quote me on this, the first 3 weeks of the college football season to be utterly boring. Louisiana beating Iowa State was interesting, and Kansas State losing to, I think it was, Arkansas State, and Miami's looked good. But without the SEC, and I include the Big Ten. People accuse me of being an SEC clown, but that's okay. I've missed the Big Ten too, because you at least have a variety. Finally, this week, for the first time, you flip on the TV and you're likely to get a pretty good game. Not guaranteed, there's something to at least lock into, but the atmospheres are going to be different, and I'm still not sure the average fan is accepting of this. I've had countless callers ask me this: hey, which game are you going to? Well, none. you go where your bosses send you, and it's a different world right now. There are a lot of hoops to go through to cover a game in any conference right now for various companies, including the one I work for. And that part's different. I've done our show every Friday from a campus. That's not happening this year. Saturday shows are going to be different, and I still think it's going to be really good. But I had an older friend call me the other day and said, "Man, this is the greatest time of the year." And I mean, it is great, but it's not as great as it's been. But I will say it's better than it could have been with no football. So I'll end this soliloquy on at least a positive note.
No question about it. You've done some analysis on all the teams in the league, but I'm really curious your thoughts on LSU. I know there's been some recent discussion on, especially with Ed Orgeron on 60 Minutes and maybe in the spotlight to an audience outside of the SEC, but defending national champion LSU, what are your thoughts on what they'll be able to do with all the losses they had?
I don't know how they can recover. I'm not going to pick on fans of schools because, without rabid, overzealous fans, we would all be in trouble. But, LSU fans are calling up and saying, we're going to be better than last year. No, you're not. just pick a position. You lost the best quarterback you've ever had. And this year you've already lost your best wide receiver in addition to losing a couple from last year. They may have some of the best defensive players in the country, but they lost Allaire, who is now tearing it up in the NFL. They've lost their two main coaches from last year, other than Orgeron. So, I think if Ed Orgeron can go 8-2, he's done a fantastic job. But 8-2 after a perfect season is probably not going to satisfy very many people. So, I think they'll get by Saturday against Mississippi State, but I see them losing at least two games, maybe more. LSU has become Alabama in their own mind, but not in mine.
We're talking to Paul Feinbaum, brought to you by MTGRT.com, your live and local mortgage expert. He joins us every Thursday at 10:15 here on Darren Donick and Chase. So when you look at Auburn, how much pressure would you say is on them this year in this unique schedule with an all SEC schedule to perform? Because you've worked in that state. You know that Alabama obviously has their following, but Auburn, Gus Malzahn, it seems like the pressure is always on to get it done. So how much do you think is on them this year?
I think there's a little bit less for this reason. Gus Malzahn, for those who don't remember, his first season, they were expected to go about 6-6, and he came within 13 seconds of a national championship. So that bought him some time. Since then, it's been like watching the stock market. It's been up and down and sideways and all over the place. But what he did last November in beating Alabama again, I think bought him some time. He was almost fired 2 years ago, except there was about a $30 million buyout. But that was such an epic win against Nick Saban. It was the third time he's beaten Saban. And, find me someone else who can claim that. That does carry a lot of weight. But he is a coach that probably, frustrates his fan base more than almost anyone else that has a chance to be really good. I mean, there's some others that take care of that and being mediocre. The problem with this opening game, and I know it's a convenient, everyone wants to pick an upset in the first weekend, and a lot of people are picking Kentucky to beat them. If that happens, then I think they turn around and play Georgia next, which is not a good start for them. And I'm fixated on this right now because, adjusting to a 10-game season, you start 0-1, then go 0-2, you better hold on for your life. You don't want to be out of this thing too quickly. And normally in a 12-game season, that's not going to happen. But in a shortened schedule, which could even be shorter than 10, that would be a disaster.
Well, and that kind of leads me to the other side of the question, because for years, and Paul, that it was always, they're playing Kentucky. All right, cool. Take care of that and move on. It hasn't been the case. I mean, they have certainly been a team to watch in the SEC. So you alluded to a lot of people picking the upset. Do you think that Kentucky can hold on to some of the success that they've had over the last few years and continue to not necessarily be at the top of the heap, but be one of those teams that you have to prepare for a little more than you used to?
Yeah, this Kentucky is not an easy win, but I also, I thought Kentucky blew an opportunity or two last year to continue the step forward. The Florida game got away from them. They had a chance to win it. That's always the critical early season game for them. The Tennessee game got away from them. So there were two games that I thought Kentucky, probably should have won that didn't. And as a result, they're still right there in the middle. It would be a huge win for them, but I still see Kentucky being passed by Tennessee. The one thing about the SEC East that I think a lot of people have looked past is outside of Georgia, how bad it has been lately. You've got teams that are, like Vanderbilt and Missouri who are really not that competitive or haven't been. South Carolina has been a disappointment. It's been an easier division to make hay than perhaps in the past. I think that's changing, and I think it's changing because of Tennessee. Maybe on Monday this next statement will look pretty silly, but I really see this program ascending. I think Jeremy Pruitt is a fantastic evaluator of talent. I think he's built a good staff. And I think this program is on the cusp of moving up. Now, I don't want to lead into your next question about South Carolina, but I will. This is a really big game, because of the schedule, and this is almost a line I'll use on any school. You lose that first game that you're supposed to win, and suddenly you look around and you still have Florida, Georgia, Auburn, Alabama. So it's a critical game.
You read my mind, Paul. You knew where I was going to go. How big of a difference do you think Mike Bobo can be now that he's on that coaching staff at South Carolina?
Well, I think he has to help. He better help because, he did bring a quarterback with him. So I think that's a big deal because Will Muschamp has not really shown anything in his tenure at South Carolina. And, I always try to, stipulate when I'm talking to reporters, let's talk about Will Muschamp without you telling me I really like Will Muschamp. Because I don't – by the way, I'm going to throw that in there about Derek Mason as well. I really don't care whether you like the guy. I just want to know whether he can coach. And Will Muschamp in 4 years at Florida and 4 years at South Carolina, has yet to prove he's a successful head coach in the SEC.
Can you confirm or will you deny that you've been hired by Deion Sanders to be on his staff?
I just want to know one thing. I mean, I try to have a good attitude in life, and I read all these books, but I just wish one day I could smile as much as Deion Sanders. I mean, I watched him on some show. I think it was First Take yesterday, and the guy, I don't know. I mean, maybe this is his dream job, but I've never seen anybody happier about coaching at Jackson State in my life. I mean, I think he will be successful because players want to be around guys like that.
So you think he will be successful?
Yeah, I mean, I think he'll be successful enough. Now, okay. Let me offer a caveat. I don't think he, even though he said he wants to live the rest of his life there, I think he'll use this as a stepping stone. And if he can bring some good players in there, which I think he can, he'll pressure Florida State at one point to hire him. Because, I mean, there were people that when I heard his name mentioned in Florida State about a year ago, I was like, really? But, I mean, I've already heard, people mention that he could be a coach in the future there. Mike Norvell is only coached one game, I think. He's not going to coach this weekend, but he better be looking over his shoulder.
Interesting. Paul, always a pleasure. Thank you so much. Continue to be safe. Have a great show. We'll talk to you next week.
Guys, thanks. It's always fun to be on.
Paul Finebaum brought to you by MTGRT.com, your live and local mortgage expert. We'll come back. More of Darren, Donick, and Chase here in the first hour. ESPN 102.5, The Game.
I don't know how they can recover. I'm not going to pick on fans of schools because, without rabid, overzealous fans, we would all be in trouble. But, LSU fans are calling up and saying, we're going to be better than last year. No, you're not. just pick a position. You lost the best quarterback you've ever had. And this year you've already lost your best wide receiver in addition to losing a couple from last year. They may have some of the best defensive players in the country, but, they lost Allaire, who is now tearing it up in the NFL. They've lost their two main coaches from last year other than Ogeron. So, I think if Ed Ogeron can go 8-2, he's done a fantastic job. But 8-2 after a perfect season is probably not going to satisfy very many people. So, I think they'll get by Saturday against Mississippi State. But I see them losing at least two games, maybe more. And, LSU has become Alabama in their own mind, but not in mine.
There you go, Paul Finebaum, every Thursday at 10:15. Good chat with him. I couldn't help but to laugh because, of course, SEC fan bases, especially coming off a national championship, you would expect them to think like that. But, no, they're not going to be as good as last year. But here's the caveat to that. They don't have to be because I'm not sure this year in the landscape of college football, because it's not the normal landscape of college football, that you have to be as good as you were last year. I don't think a team like last year, you have to have a team like last year for this year to work. I think you could have not only one hiccup, maybe two hiccups, and win the national championship under these conditions, right? This year is just going to be different. And I think for them, I'm not saying that they're going to repeat. I'm just saying you don't have to be undefeated. You don't have to have Joe Burrow and Clyde Edwards-Helaire and all those receivers that are gone. And look, they lost a lot, and I get it. They're like Alabama and others in the SEC. They've got other five stars sitting there waiting, but they're not going to be as good. But I guess, guys, I don't know if you have to be that good this year to possibly win it all.
Well, you have to be good to win it all, for sure. But to make the playoff, you might be able to lose a game or two with all the wild cards that are out there. I think the first thing you have to wonder is, can you play all the games? That's the goal for the SEC. They're going to have resources and maybe some methods that other schools don't have financially to pull off. For example, Houston now has had four straight games postponed for one reason or another. You know, they're not in the SEC. They don't have the testing capability, probably, or the desire to do this that maybe the SEC does. So that's the first thing to see is, can everybody play all the games? I'm sure there's going to be players that have to miss games for quarantine, for cases, all of that. But let's say that you do, and you go 8-2, as Paul put it out there. If you lose the right two, you could very much have an argument to at least get into the playoff. But what we don't know is, who are the next guys that have been recruited by Ed Orgeron that we don't know much about right now, but all of a sudden, the recruiting gurus are like, yeah, that guy's been pretty good. He's been waiting behind Joe Burrow. He's been waiting behind Edwards-Helaire. I mean, you just know they're going to have great talent all over the field. But how quickly can they jump in there and play well and win the big games? Can they beat Alabama? That's the question. But just the victory for Ed Orgeron to me is fascinating. It wasn't that long ago we were sitting on our show going, man, if Ed Orgeron loses three games, he's gone. He's gone. He's dead man walking. There's no way he's going to make it. You would have thought, you would have laughed, like, Ed Orgeron is going to be on 60 Minutes in 4 years. In 4 years, he's going to be on 60 Minutes. Here's the leader in college football right now, national championship coach, interesting character, interesting story. We would have said, Ed Orgeron, what? You mean the cheater who got thrown out at Ole Miss, that got recruiting violations at Tennessee? He was at USC, journeyman, like... It's amazing, his path. It's incredible.
Yeah, but he's made it work. And now I think where the pressure comes in, because I agree, they don't have to be as good. But you're always going to have those people that say, yeah, well, Alabama just, you know, they rotate guys in and out and they stay at a high level. Why can't we do that? You know, LSU just won the national championship, so, you know, they have that mindset of it's going to be that way. It probably isn't.
I don't think I'm ready to put Edo in the same category as Nick Saban.
No, I'm not. But to Paul's point,
I know
point,
in their minds, right? In yeah. their minds, they're right. They're not taking
right.
a backseat.
That is the SEC way.
Yeah,
right?
Sure.
It's just once you've won, it's like, well, what are you going to do next year?
Win it again.
But I do wonder if there will be somebody that maybe not to his level, but that can do that to an extent. Because let's be honest, before Nick Saban got to Alabama, I mean, we knew he was a good coach, but not what he's become. And so, you know, why not Edo after this? You know, could he figure out a way to, maybe not this year, but they go back in a year or two, that they're the constant that's competing with Alabama in the West and in the SEC overall? I have to see it. I can't sit here and say, yeah, that's definitively going to happen, but I can ask the question of, well, why not? I mean, it just depends on the recruiting. So, but like you said, they don't have to be what they were last year, but they can, as long as they're competing. Because I'll say this too, in the SEC schedule overall, I mean, I look at Alabama's schedule. I don't think they go perfect. I think they slip up at least once, but that doesn't mean it's going to take them out of the playoff hunt. I don't know who that loss is to.
I have no idea. Let me see a week. Let me watch this week.
Yeah.
But the 10 conference games,
then I'll step
change,
out there and say
it changes
stuff like
the
that.
Equation.
Yeah. No doubt.
Yeah.
That's why I'm saying it's not normal. You don't have to be, because there's going to be hiccups and you're still going to be able to get into the playoffs. I mean, I guess I don't want to say there's not going to be a perfect team, because if you play seven games, you could be perfect. I mean, that's not what you're supposed to play five more. You're supposed to play a lot more games. So there's a lot missing.
Well, this is
so
what
it's a little bit easier to go
biggest.
Undefeated with many less, you know, with a whole lot of less games.
Undefeated is tough. Or you're right. If it's seven games, that might be something different. But this is what I'm curious about. Again, in the world of, they play the full 10 games. In a normal year where you have your conference schedule and then you fill in your other games, most schools have the tough early game. You know, let's take Alabama. They're going to play the game in Atlanta against X team from the ACC. Here's our one big test, non-conference. And then you're going to sprinkle the other non-conference games and bye weeks in there. So you have your... Okay, we're going to rest our guys this week because we have a bye week. And then later in the year, we have our little cupcake against the Citadel or whatever. You know, Alabama usually plays, and Florida does this too. They play a
tiny school. It's before the LSU game. Either they're off or it's before the LSU game.
And so, but you don't have that this year, right? So there's going to be a little bit more of the NFL. Oh, man, we got these five guys banged up. Even in a game that you win pretty handily, which Alabama is going to win most of their games pretty handily. But they still, in those games, might be tested more, and you might have some guys bang up and injuries accumulate to where you go into the following week a little more banged up than you'd like to be for a game that is going to be a challenge. That's what I'm wondering, that dynamic.
I got a text here from an LSU fan. Coming from an LSU Tiger fan, not all of us think we'll be better this year. Some of us are prepared for a bad season, but it's college football. You lose players and you rebuild. I personally understand and am behind Coach O all the way. Excited to see what we build in the next few years. We'll never have another Burrow. Go Tigers. That on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com.
Yeah, I mean, isn't that the other fun part of SEC fandom? Is the insane fans speak for all of the sane fans, and then the sane fans want to raise their hands. Wait a minute, we're not all crazy.
Right?
Some of us are normal people.
Well, just to put it in perspective on why it is not crazy to think that there's going to be a drop-off, that team is going to go down as one of the best college football teams we've ever seen.
Oh, yeah.
Like, they're going to be up there with all, you know, whatever we would list as the top 10 greatest college football teams of all time. I think they're in the top 10. Don't you agree?
Oh, yeah. When you go back
they're
and
one
watch
of the top teams we've ever seen.
Remember when we watched, or we had Richard Justice on, and it was during the absolute slow time where there were no games of any kind, so we're watching all the classic games, and we had all just watched the Texas-USC game. He said, I've watched it like three times because it kept coming on. It's one of the greatest games. But that's when you know you have an incredible team, is when you're watching a game like that years later and you're saying, oh my gosh, I forgot that guy was on that team. Right, guys who go on and play 8-10 years in the NFL were great players, and they're on that team. Like Edwards-Helaire, like they had so many stars scoring touchdowns and all these points. Like he wasn't like the man, like Herschel Walker, who led Georgia, right, as the one-man band. He was just one of an array of superstars, right? Burrow got all the attention, but they had studs everywhere, right?
Well, the difference is like the LSU team that Nick Saban won, was with Jamarcus Russell, right?
No, they never won the championship with Jamarcus Russell.
That's Matt.
They won
Flynn,
it with Matt Mauch.
Well, it was Matt Mauch.
No, they never won
and
with
Matt
Russell.
Flynn. Never. Well, they won a lot of games, but they didn't win the championship with him.
I thought we were at the
you
wasn't
were
the
you
national.
Were at the Sugar Bowl.
We were at the Sugar Bowl
they
where they
trounced
beat up
Notre
on
Dame, but Notre that was Dame. Not the championship game.
That was not okay. Okay, yeah. I had for some reason that was a national championship game in my head.
No, that was a Notre Dame is not in the same league.
Oh
as
my
this
gosh,
LSU
we were
team.
There. It was pathetic. I mean, it did. It looked like they were playing a high school team. It was really bad.
But Saban won it with Matt Mauch as his quarterback when they beat
Oklahoma.
Oklahoma with Jason White was the Heisman Trophy winner.
Right, to your point, like you don't go like those guys were great, and you know that's fine in college, but they didn't go on like
right.
Some
right.
of these teams, you look at, oh my gosh, look at the guys you know in the NFL or look at their NFL careers, and those guys were on that team. Where those teams, it's a little bit different.
Yeah,
a little bit different.
Matt Flynn and Jamarcus Russell were on the team, but they obviously weren't. Matt Mauch was the starter, and they had. Joseph Addai was one of the running backs.
Well, that is another. It's a little bit like the discussion of Kentucky basketball, right? LSU is loaded with guys who go on to the NFL.
Yeah,
and you do ask yourself, man, they got all these guys. Maybe they should have won it another time or two, you know. But of course, there's a team called Alabama in their same division. It's not easy. It's like Tennessee in the '90s, right? They almost never lost to anybody other than Florida. But Florida was just as much and a little bit more of a juggernaut.
Were you surprised that Paul said it's fair to question Calipari and why he hasn't won more with the talent he's brought through there?
Oh, I'm not surprised he's questioning. He loves to push the buttons of the Kentucky fans. But I think it's hard to get everybody in there new. define their roles so quickly and then be perfect in a tournament where there's other teams that are good. And he mentioned another dynamic that we didn't really discuss in the first segment was there is a little tug of war. Like Villanova has got a formula where they're not one and dones, right? They build a team of juniors and seniors, you know, through the program where, you know, they're going to be really tough to beat with the experience against the one and dones.
They got that Virginia formula. And Villanova.
Virginia's another one. And Virginia's, it's not like they don't have anybody that goes to the NBA. Because they do, but it's maybe not the one and done kind of guys. Like I it's interesting. I'd love to do like a poll of coaches. It's like you could have the perfect formula, right? Would you rather have a team of juniors and seniors who are not NBA blue chippers, you know, first round draft picks, but they've played together for 2 or 3 years versus a team of first round draft pick freshmen?
Gonzaga does not do it with one and dones. Kansas, North Carolina, Duke, and Kentucky do it with one and dones. That's how they approach it. They are trying to get one and done guys. They're trying to get the cream of the crop, five-star recruit. Well, yeah, so I said North Carolina. Yeah. North Carolina, Duke, Kansas, and Kentucky. They are going for the five-star, the top five-star recruit in the country.
But I think they would tell you. I think Bill Self.
Short amount of time he's there.
I think Bill Self and Coach Cal and Coach K would all say that I'd still like to have a couple guys that give me the glue, right, to blend my one and dones with experienced guys. Those are your best teams.
And
right?
haven't you seen that some?
Is hard to win with.
You've seen that some with, you know.
Yes.
Like Kentucky, in this conversation, it doesn't happen a lot. Like I'd love to, and I know this is impossible, but just for the sake of this conversation, if you could go back and look at some of those teams and say, if you just had 2 years with those guys, how different it would look. I mean, I think you'd have to say that they would have at least one more, if not two more national championships, if they were just able to build a little bit more than they have with the one and dones.
No doubt. I mean, think about the difference in baseball. Vanderbilt is getting that way in baseball with their recruiting classes, but the difference is, he knows when he gets those guys, he's got them for 3 years.
But there's so much pressure on those guys at Kentucky, for example.
Oh, yeah.
Because if they stick around, everybody views them as a failure.
Why,
like, you're not very
good. You're not a first-round pick.
Right. Why are you still here? Like, half your team just left. Why are you still here? That, you know, it's not fair, but that's another. There's probably a lot of pressure to leave because all your other teammates are doing it. And if you stick around, it's like, oh, well, then you're not that good.
Right. Or you've underachieved. Well, who's the kid?
The kid from Clarksville. Who's the kid from Clarksville that did that?
Oh, Alex Poythress.
Poythress. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he stayed for 4 years. Oh, my gosh. What's wrong with him?
They thought he was a one-and-done
kid.
And
was just a really good SEC player for 4 years? What's wrong with that guy? Well, who's the super big guy that was really blossoming this year? Who am I thinking of, Elijah? The big man, shot blocker. You know, he was supposed to be one of those one-and-dones. And, like, I remember seeing a documentary where in high school, and I'm blanking on his name. You guys are going to have to look it up for me while I tell the story. But there's a documentary where it's like his whole family is like, you got to keep going. I think it's from New York City. You got to keep this going. You got it for the family. You got to be a first-round pick. You got to stay on track. You know, you got a chance to be a lottery. People were all over him. And he got to Kentucky. He hardly played his first year.
Nick Richards,
yeah. But now, I mean, a couple years later, now he's turned into he's a beast now.
He's listed from Jamaica.
Yeah, yeah. Jamaica, and played high school ball, I think, in New York. But he was a mess. I mean, he hardly got in there.
Darren, when we saw Anthony Davis play with the Pelicans in Orlando, was that his rookie year or his second year? Do you remember?
Well, that was probably 2013, probably.
If it was the Pelicans, it would have been a second year because he was a New Orleans Hornet for a year before they.
Okay, so it was the first year of the Pelicans then. Because, yeah, I think it was 2014.
Was it 2014? Okay. Mm. It was either 13 or 14 we were there.
But his team at Kentucky, right, Anthony Davis, that's the 1 year that they won the whole thing. But that team had a couple of guys that were the glue right? They weren't. Anthony Davis was the superstar.
But he's also right. He was also a little bit different than all of these. These guys are all great. That
he was a freak.
Like Anthony Davis is like different level, right?
No doubt. But they had a lot. They had Kid Gilchrist, and they had some other guys. But they had a couple of guys that it stayed for more than 1 year. And then I'm trying to think of their guy, the one guy that was there for 3 or 4 years. You're like, he was that category, Darren. You're saying, what's wrong with this guy? He's been at Kentucky for 4 years.
Yep.
I think it was Terrence Jones was there for a while, and Deron
Terrence
Lamb
Jones
was a starter.
I think a sophomore on
that team.
Was that
the kid from Chicago?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the guy I'm thinking of was a little older. I mean, I remember that team well because Vanderbilt had such a great team that year, and they beat them in the SEC tournament championship game. That was the high point for that squad. But then Kentucky goes on and wins the whole thing. Terrence Jones definitely. Who am I thinking of? Marquise Teague was a freshman point guard.
To your point, they had some more seasoned guys.
They had a little more seasoned.
But Anthony Davis was also just the freak athlete that came through there that was just different than everybody else. You just knew it. And, I mean, he's proven that at the next level. I mean, he's just different than everybody. I mean, you can make the case he is the best player in the NBA.
Oh,
right?
Yes.
I think there's
I mean,
no
there's
doubt.
A lot of great players in the NBA, but you could make the case he is, you know, arguably the best player in the league. All right, we will come back. We'll talk with the GM, Floyd Reese, to kick off the second hour of Darren, Donnick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.